The Hebrew Order of David is one of our community's oldest and most established global outreach organizations. Join Stan Clare for the next hour as he explores the issues facing the men in the community. The HOD Hour is a fundraising initiative for the HOD. Welcome to the HOD Hour with Stan Clare. This is the HOD Hour with Stan Clare.
And welcome to the Hebrew Order of David, the HOD Hour. It's a slight echo, I'm afraid. I don't know why. And so welcome. This in Johannesburg, a slightly wintry feel as winter begins. And I think, I don't know how cold it's going to be, but certainly today is a bit chilly. If I did nip out for a few minutes, sorry about the pun, to the shops to just get something very quickly. And I have to say it was a pretty eerie feeling driving around the streets, which are tantamount to no traffic, total lockdown. I was quite impressed. There were a few people doing their shopping, but other than that, it was quite, people were obeying the lockdown. I don't know what it's like in the rest of the country, but according to the news, the police and the army are still having problems. From the point of view of COVID, I have to say that today we received news of a friend in England, Brian Eisenberg, who was at school with me, but also was a friend of the Hebrew Order of David, in that he was very involved in charity work in the United Kingdom, and the Hebrew Order of David lodges were very involved with working with him on some of those projects. He passed away this morning. Unfortunately, he did have underlying complications. We also have a couple of members of the Hebrew Order of David who are ill with COVID in the United States. Some are recovering. We have one a brother of the Hebrew Order of David, Eli Seliger, in the United Kingdom. He's critical. His brother is also in the hospital at the same time, and the two of them will be wishing them a refuah shleima. So we're going to talk today, because we're in lockdown and because we're going to be facing a situation where families are not going to be able to get together on Pesach. I thought it would be an opportunity to have a discussion with a rabbi to talk about what one does. You're not with your family, you're on your own, and what should one be doing? I understand the preparation, but I'm sure there are nuances which we need to examine. And I have with me tonight, privileged to have Rabbi Daniel Brody, who is resident in Israel, but he's an ex-South African, and he is going to talk to us and discuss what to do about Pesach when you're alone. Welcome, Rabbi.
Hi, Stan, and Shalom Aleichem to all the listeners.
Thank you. And so, Rabbi, it's going to be a strange feeling because we're used to family around the time of Pesach. We get together with family. It's one of the real occasions in the Jewish calendar where family get together. And from the smallest, the youngest, everybody participates. Now we're going to be sitting apart on our own in our separate homes. And what's it going to be like? What are we going to do?
Look, in a certain sense, there's obviously some message that Hashem is telling us. Nothing happens just randomly. We have to know that this virus is something which could never have happened unless Hashem allowed it to happen. The Gemara says, in Chulin, the Gemara says that not a blade of grass can move unless Hashem appoints an angel to move it. And there are billions of pieces of grass, and there are billions of angels. So we have to understand that everything that happens in the world is the will of Hashem. That is what Hashem decided. And therefore one has to have a bit of context before going into the Pesach, this particular Pesach, to understand that obviously Hashem speaking. Now, to understand what the message is quite difficult because we don't have nevuah, we don't have prophecy today. In the old days, if you weren't sure what to do, you just go to the prophet and you'd ask him, what does Hashem want from me? and you'd work on this or that, and that is what that's what you would do. But today we don't have prophecy. So when Hashem speaks like this, and he brings a big tzoras, and it's a major tzoras, it's a tzoras on the whole belt, on the whole world, and it's a tzoras on Klal Yisrael. There's lots of Jews who we've lost. You know, it's a very big tzoras, this tzoras.
Sadly.
And so therefore, we have to take note. You know, the doctors have no idea, the scientists have no idea, and therefore, it's very hard for us because we need to see some sort of message. You know, what is Hashem saying? Everybody, any reasonable, honest person has to admit today that Hashem has stopped the whole world. And he's in fact stopped the whole world through the very thing that man has become so powerful with. What do I mean? It's quite amazing. But how does this virus get to the whole world? There's been other viruses. There's been plagues. The time of the Ramor, the great Ashkenazi commentator, there was a plague too. He couldn't drink wine on Purim because he had fled because there was a plague. So there have been plagues in history, but there's never been a plague which has hit the whole world. And how did it get to the whole world? It got through the whole world through travel. In fact, and that was the very thing that every country had to stop straight away was travel. And the travel sort of symbolizes the brilliance of man, technology, you know, to overcome what is on the physical world. You know, man can't, you can only walk, run, can't fly. All of a sudden he devised a plan that he could actually fly. And that was the very thing that had to get stopped straight away. And so we have to take note. There's no scientist, no doctor that has a cure for this thing. The only thing we have is Hashem. You've got to take precautions. There's a mitzvah in the Torah that you have to live. There's a mitzvah, you have to choose life. There's no point in being negligent. The Torah says you're not allowed to be negligent. So you have to do whatever you can to avoid this thing. But you have to also know that it's the Ribbono Shel Olam, the master of the world, the one who created everything, has stopped the world. And he's almost telling us that I'm in charge, in case we may have lost sight of that. Now, there could be no better time to take this message in, other, you know, more than Pesach. Because we have to understand what Pesach was when the Jews were in Mitzrayim. We got no idea what a fortress Egypt was. Every single entrance to Egypt, in and out of Egypt, had over 24 gates. Each one had 24 locks. Each one had a different combination. And then on top of that, they were the brilliant witchcraft people. And so therefore, to try and get out of Egypt was impossible. Not only that, even to get into the palace of Paro was impossible because it was guarded with lions and bears. So when Moshe and Aaron went to go and speak to Paro to say, let my people go, they were encountered by lions and bears, but Moshe just lifted up his staff, his stick, and two lions came to him and, you know, trotted together with him to the, into the palace. But just to understand that Mitzrayim meant enslavement, Mitzrayim means a fortress, Mitzrayim, the very word means Meitzaryam. It was a sea of Meitzarim, of borders, of fortresses, of gates. And so therefore there was no greater enslavement. It was impossible to leave Mitzrayim. Absolutely impossible. And so in a certain sense, for the first time in our generation, we've actually experienced some iota of what enslavement is. You can't move. No matter where you are in the world, you can't move. Okay, they give a slight leniency to go to the, you know, to the shop. You know, but you basically can't move. You're housebound. And we've never ever experienced that in our time. And so therefore, Pesach, in a certain sense, this year may bring the message that Hashem's trying to tell us that He's the master of the world and He's talking to us, and there's, and we have to try and improve. We have to look at ourselves. Where are we going wrong? What do we need to improve? What is Hashem saying to me? Because He's almost brought an enslavement upon us and reminded us that He's around. And so therefore this could be the most inspiring Pesach we'll ever have.
So that's powerful stuff that you're saying. I mean, it's really taking it to the furthest point in what one's imagination is going to allow us. You're speaking to the Hebrew Order of you're listening to the Hebrew Order of David, the HID Hour. And if you would like to ask any questions of the rabbi, we're going to be discussing Pesach. You can SMS me, SMS on 082-963-4028. So, Rabbi, we're in lockdown. We're now at the point where you say we're going to be experiencing a new type of Pesach and getting the message. What's for us to do? What are us mere mortals do as to make it meaningful and to get the most out of it?
Okay, so what I've spoken about until now is really the context. It's context to understand when bad things happen, it means that Hashem's talking. So once a person's got that context, so then he can look inwards and say, well, where do I need to improve? Maybe I need to fix up my Lashon Hara. Maybe this, maybe that. I don't know. Each person is different. And the lockdown gives a person just to an opportunity to just take a step back and say, you know, Hashem, I want to try and improve. You're obviously talking to me in some way, and therefore each person can decide and hope that Hashem gives him the right wisdom. You're asking now with regards to practicalities. On a practical basis this year, as you say, we're not going to be with our families, and we have to see, are there any major differences? So I think the most important thing that a person needs to know is that I would say the most important thing to know is that you have to prepare. You have to prepare for the Seder. Because usually what happens is, let's say every Seder has, say, 15, maybe 20 people at it, I don't know, but let's say the average Seder is, you know, somewhere there. So most participants,
like grandparents, children, grandchildren,
So most participants are just participants. And this year, nobody's a participant. That's the most amazing and perhaps going to be so inspiring for us. And nobody's going to be just a person watching, a spectator this year.
A bystander.
Yeah, you're not going to be a bystander. This year, you're going to have to get involved, get your hands dirty, get involved. And so, you know, for first time Seder makers, one's got to do preparation. And even if you've done it before, actually, your Pesach is going to be a different Pesach if you do some preparation. The best thing that you can do is to pick up your, standard Haggadah and go through it. It doesn't take long. It really doesn't take long. You just need to see what you're in for. Now, there are two things that a person has to do. Number one, he has to know, what do I need for Pesach? You know, usually I go to someone's Pesach Seder. I might have done this for 30 years, but I've never prepared a Pesach for myself. And so therefore, he has to know what to get. In fact, I've actually compiled a guide. It happens to be that this year I decided to compile a guide exactly for this purpose, because I realized that a lot of people are making Seder for the first time. And therefore, I compiled a guide on what to buy and how to prepare for the Seder. If people want it from me, then I can, you know, I can give my details. But the first thing is, there are four mitzvahs of the night. Okay, ultimately the Seder night is a night of mitzvahs, and so therefore a person has to be on top of it. He has to get ready. Now, obviously, this Pesach Seder, you can't go out for luxuries. You know, just stick to the basics. Number one, you need matzah. Number two, you need maror. Number three, you need wine or grape juice. And number four, you need a inquisitive mind that has a Haggadah. Those are the four things that you need this Pesach. Okay? And we can go into how much matzah does a person need. Well, at the bare minimum, a person's going to have to eat at least two-thirds of a square matzah, at least. I say at least because really, if he does all the mitzvahs properly, he'll have to eat 1 2/3. But 2/3 of a square matzah, and he would have fulfilled the most amazing mitzvah of eating matzah on the night of Pesach. Okay, that's number one. Number two, he has to eat maror. Maror means bitter herbs. Okay, how much bitter herbs does he have to eat? Well, there are two types of bitter herbs you can get. You can either get lettuce, some people use endives, but let's say romaine lettuce, or you can get ground, you know, the horseradish. Not crane, you can't use the crane that's been preserved, but actual fresh horseradish. So if you're going to use the romaine lettuce, so then you have to eat at least two, you know, decent-sized pieces, leaves, right? Pretty much if you would stretch an average hand out, that's how much maror you have to eat. And then you've fulfilled an amazing mitzvah, a rabbinic mitzvah. Today it's only rabbinic because we don't have the Beis HaMikdash, but it could be any day now. We're expecting the Beis HaMikdash to be built any second. In fact, there was just a car going around over here with some loud music, and my kids quickly ran out to see what, not out, they went to the porch, and to see if Mashiach had arrived. This has happened about every day for the last week. So we're very much anticipating Mashiach, but in the meantime, we don't have the Beis HaMikdash, and therefore Maror is a rabbinic mitzvah, and so therefore one can eat, say, two big pieces of romaine lettuce. Now, and the third thing is wine or grape juice, okay? Most poskim rule, most commentators rule that grape juice is sufficient, and you have to drink, you have to have 4 cups of wine. Yeah, make sure you're going to drink 4 cups of wine. If you can't drink the whole cup of the wine, so then you have to drink most of it. How big does your cup have to be? Well, it should be at least 100 millimeters. If you have a smaller cup, say 86 millimeters, but certainly not less than 86 millimeters. But it should be 100 millimeters. If you can't, then...
Milliliters. We're talking about liters.
Milliliters. Okay, so let's say you choose... The better is to have 100 mils, and 100 mils for 4 cups gives you 400 mils, and that's what you should be drinking on the night of Pesach in the order of the Haggadah. And then
entitled the equivalent of about a can of Coke, a 350 mil can or 400 mil can. Less than half a liter.
But you know, you haven't fulfilled the mitzvah if you just drink one massive cup of grape juice, half a liter of grape juice. You haven't fulfilled the mitzvah. There's something great in the fact that it's 4 separate cups. You have to drink 4 separate cups. Okay, it doesn't help to drink one massive cup of 500 mils. You have to drink because each cup represents a new stage of redemption that Hashem took us out of Mitzrayim. So therefore you need 4 separate cups, each of 100 mils. If you can't drink all the cup, then you can, but the cup has to be at least 100 mils. And if you can't drink all of it, then you just drink the majority. But the cup itself has to be filled with at least 100 mils. Now, the final thing is that you need a Haggadah. Okay? Now, most people might be a little bit, they might be a bit worried about going through the Haggadah. For a couple of reasons. First of all, they've mainly been participants, and usually the leader, wherever they've gone, so they're, in all likelihood, the one leading the Seder has been the one doing the Haggadah the whole time, so they haven't really read from it. So that's why I'm saying to all the listeners, go do yourself a favor, get out your Haggadah, and read it, okay, beforehand, okay? There was a great rugby coach in South Africa, his name was Jake White. Okay, they even won the World Cup with him. That's about as much as I know about rugby and the World Cups. But he said a great thing. He said, if you fail to prepare, prepare to fail. And it's a very good vote. If you fail to prepare, then prepare to fail. So it's important, prepare. Just read through the Haggadah so you know what is the whole direction, what is the whole approach, of the Haggadah. And if you want, I can explain it now what the approach of the Haggadah is. But just, those are your 4 things, the most important 4 things that you have to do, because those are your 4 mitzvahs. Everything else, to be quite honest, is important, but it's not as important as those four things. So you're going to see in the Haggadah that you need something called karpas. Karpas is that vegetable that you dip into salt water, but basically right at the beginning. Okay, so you need like a bit of parsley or a, you know, or a cooked potato, but just a tiny bit. You don't even need a kazayit, olives with. And but that's you know, that's a nice custom, and it's good to do. But if you don't, you know, if you're not able to find you know, these things, so it's not a disaster. The other four things are, you know, it's called a mefurish. They explicit mitzvahs, and so therefore that's the priority. That's priority number one. Now that would be karpas. Other minhagim of the night is also eggs. Is to have an egg and in salt water. So again, but that's a nice minhag, that's a nice custom, and so therefore if you can, that's also very good. It would be great if you could have we have to understand that the whole night of Pesach is royalty. It's about going from being a slave to Paro, who was full of impurity and really represented by darkness, which is why one of the plagues is darkness. And we going into royalty, which is represented by this freedom that we got out of Mitzrayim, that we went to Har Sinai to get the Torah, which is light. And that's why when the Mitzrayim, when the Egyptians had dark, the Jews had light, because their lives were a dark life full of impurity, whereas we were on our way to Har Sinai and to get the Torah, which is represented by light, because that's the ultimate freedom when a person lives with purpose and is a master over his own nature. So therefore, it's important to try and do whatever you can to make this night royal. Now, there's a few things that you should do. Number one, you should have very nice crockery and cutlery. And again, obviously we're stuck now because you can't really buy anything, but everybody has probably some sort of a set, so they should try and make sure that looks good. And also, one should try and have a nice tablecloth and a decent seder plate. But these again are all add-ons; they're all extra benefits, which should arouse the neshama, the soul. However, they're not as important again as the first four things, which is the matzah, the maror, the drinking of the grape juice wine, and the saying of the Haggadah.
So when you're going through the Haggadah, you're going through step by step. So there's sections which everybody's familiar with. So you, the family, if you're with the kids, then you got to do the four questions. You still ask the four questions. You're sitting with two grandparents alone at a table. You're going to go through that as well, or are you just going to take it for granted? Do you go through the whole Haggadah reading each and everything, or are there points where you can leave it out, or points we should highlight, you know, to make it meaningful on that? Because, you know, if you're sitting in a crowd and you're moving through the Seder, then, you know, it's interesting, people read and everybody's participating. But as you say, there are going to be two people here going to be sitting, waiting to have something to eat, you know, getting drowsy from the wine, and you know, what do we look at?
So I think the first thing to note is that nothing really changes from if you were with more people. Just keep in mind, quite amazingly, that on the night of Pesach, when we were in Mitzrayim on that night, so each family was actually by itself. You weren't even allowed to go and visit another family, right? Because that night was the night that Hashem was bringing the destroying angel that would kill anybody who was around. And Hashem made a special mitzvah for us to paint the blood, you know, the doorpost with the blood of the lamb. And then that way the destroyer wouldn't come in to kill the firstborn. So you weren't allowed to go out on the night of Pesach. So it's quite actually unbelievable. But this Pesach is going to be very similar to that Pesach, that you aren't allowed to go out. Okay? So now what's important to note is that the Haggadah doesn't change. It's exactly the same. And the Rambam, and we paskin this, this is the real halacha, says to us that even if a person's by himself, he still asks the questions of Manishtana. You don't need a four-year-old to tell you the questions of Manishtana, because it's not just a experiential idea for kids, right, but it's for ourselves. It's for ourselves to internalize that Hashem made the world, Hashem runs the world, and we need to try and commit further to Him. And so therefore the Manishtana, even though, because we all know these questions, we've been doing it for so many years, so anyway we know the questions. So it must be that there's something greater. What's greater is that we need to speak out these things as much as we can so that it goes into the depths of our souls. So it's important that to know that nothing really changes. If you ask me, what's the most important part of the Haggadah? Okay? So then I'll say to you that towards the end of Magid, you know, step number 6 is Magid. That's when you start saying over the Manishtana and Vehisha Amda and all of that. Although it starts off just before the Vehisha Amda, and then you've got verses. Now, towards the end of that, just before you're going to start washing for the matzah, so there's there's three things. There's Pesach, matzah, and maror. Okay, right. This is just, I'm not mistaken, it's just after the 10 plagues. Okay, and it's Rabban Gamliel. Now, it's important to know that a person has to say these three paragraphs in order to do his mitzvah of saying the story of Mitzrayim, of coming out of Mitzrayim. So it's, in fact, I'm going to tell you that it's just after Dayenu. If you want to know, the most important paragraph of the paragraphs of the whole Nat is just after Dayenu. And the paragraphs are, starts off Pesach, right? And it tells you why we eat this, or at least why we've got a shank bone on the table and what it represents. And then Maror, and that it symbolizes the embitterment. And the matzah as well, this is the bread of our affliction. But the paragraph that starts off about Rabban Gamliel and mentions Pesach, matzah, maror, that is the critical. A person who doesn't say that has not done his mitzvah. You understand what I'm saying? It's
yes.
Important to know that, you know, even if a person needs, you know, is in a rush, or if a person's not so well, so, and I'll tell you where they give it. The case is like a nursing mother. A nursing mother sometimes has to, you know, not sit by the table. She wants to go out, or, you know. So she has to come back to listen or say these three paragraphs, the paragraphs of Pesach, Matzah, Umaror. Because if a person hasn't said that, so he hasn't done his obligation. So that's a bare minimum. You know, I want to tell you that every word that you add on to those three paragraphs, so every word that you say at the Seder table about the coming out of Egypt is a mitzvah. And we say it's Arezem Shubach, is praiseworthy. And you know that there's a minhag, there's a custom to stay up the whole of Shavuot. It's called Tikkun Leil. Well, I want to tell you that that's a very nice custom. But the night of Pesach is even greater with regards to talking about the coming out of Mitzrayim. The longer you can stay up and talk about all the miracles, so then the greater you are and the greater the mitzvah, and it's more important even than Tikkun, probably more important than Tikkun Leil, because Tikkun Leil on Shavuot is actually just a custom, as opposed to this, is brought in the actual 5 books. So at a bare minimum, you have to say the paragraph that starts off Rabban Gamliel and mentions Pesach, Matzah, Umaror. But as I say, the more you can talk about coming out of Mitzrayim, the better. And that's why I can't emphasize it enough. You got to do a preparation. Go through the Haggadah. You know, the Haggadah itself says that even if you're a wise person and you've learned a lot, but there's so much more. And every year I try to get another Haggadah and try to see this commentary and that commentary. And I write them up again if people would want a copy of my commentary on the Haggadah this year, and also this guide in order that, you know, to help people prepare for Pesach. So they should email me, and gladly I'll give it over.
Just give us the email.
My email is Danny Brody, spelled D-A-N-N-Y, B-R-A-U-D-E. So it's Danny Brody, D-A-N-N-Y-B-R-A-U-D-E @gmail.com. And just email me, and with pleasure. I've had over 1,000 people have already got my guard this week on keeping Pesach, and they forwarded to a whole lot of other more people. So I think hopefully that will be helpful for other people. But as I say, it's such a powerful night. You know, the commentaries tell us what happens in Shamayim in the heavens on this night is just unbelievable. You know, Hashem has a whole lot of hosts. I don't know how it's beyond even our understanding, but he's got hosts and angels that are just waiting to hear the Jews say over the Haggadah and do their mitzvahs. And it says at that point, the gates of Shamayim are opened. You want to daven? There's no better night to daven, because that was the night that Hashem saved us from being enslaved. You know, and it was right at the last point, you know, just one second later, we would have been finished. And so therefore, one has to know it's such a powerful night. It is really the energy of emunah, of faith, for the whole year. What you can gain on Pesach night, if you use it properly, is actually energy for the whole year. And based on the context of what we've spoken about, you know, with COVID and this coronavirus, so it's even more so this year, because we feel enslaved and we see that there's no one else to turn to. And so therefore it is a powerful night and really can inspire us and you know, help us grow.
So you're listening to the HID Hour. I'm Stan Claff. I have as a guest Rabbi Daniel Brody. He's written a book called Learn Shabbos on 3 Minutes a Day. But we're also highlighting Pesach, because during the lockdown, most people, or almost everyone, I would hope, is locked into their homes, only with their families or on their own, maybe couples. Even worse, if you're on your own and you don't have a partner to turn to. So what do you do for Pesach? And Rabbi, there's been a couple of messages, questions. So one or two messages surrounding the question of, could you use Zoom or join me or one of these Skype things to be able to connect to the family? I see the chief rabbi, Rabbonim around the world have said absolutely not. But they've given some suggestions about what one should do prior by connecting with the family via one of these connections and talking to the family before the Pesach actually starts. So you can't go to shul, you're housebound, and you're going to be launching straight into the meal, and you're going to be discussing all these things. You're going to do what you're doing at home. Why not Skype? Why not Zoom? Why not one of these things? What's preventing us? I know it is, but that's the question.
Beside that, no, it's a fair question. I think I just want to approach a question with just from two angles. Number one, just the technical halachic aspect of it, and that is that there's a few problems with operating machines before Shabbos that will, or Yom Tov, that will carry on through Yom Tov. You know, so to pre-program a TV to go on Shabbos or Yom Tov, is a problem. It's something that we'll call, it's called Avshad de Milsa. It's something which degrades Shabbos and Yom Tov. The whole point of Shabbos and Yom Tov is to try and to make a difference from the 6 days of the week. As the Torah says, that 6 days you must work and the seventh you must rest. So it has to be some form of rest. And anything, especially something which is sound-based, is problematic. So that's from a technical point. And the other thing is that some points can actually hold that what happens when there's Skype or whatever it is, it could even be Skype, Zoom, whatever these things are. So there's some sort of digital writing that's happening behind the scenes. Now, you're not allowed to write on Shabbos or Yom Tov. And so therefore, this would be an extension of that, that every time you're going past a video camera, so in a certain sense, you're being photographed. So if you're not planning to be photographed and you just somehow, you know, get photographed, you know, like by the Kotel, they've got lots of the cameras just to prevent terrorism. Okay, so there's nothing you can do, right? But to actually try and especially put up a camera in order to be seen and to give over, so that's a problem, and that's the same thing, by other recordings. So that's from a technical viewpoint, why you can't do it. Okay, I would assume that the chief rabbis and all the poskim have gone against it, not only because of the technicality, but also because you're going to destroy Shabbos if you allow this thing, because this is this year. But you know, in a week or two, when this whole thing hopefully has unfolded and things are back to normal, so then people will say, okay, you know, so then the rabbis allowed watching TV and all these things. So it's a slippery slope, and that's probably also half the reason why they've gone against it. I want to say a second point, aside from just the technicalities, and that is that I think you have to take a step back and think, well, what does Hashem want? You know, if Hashem wanted that we should all have the Seder together, so then he would have made a situation where we could have the Seder together. You know, this virus has not just hit us physically, it's hit us spiritually. You can't even go to a minyan. You know, it's the most unbelievable thing. In a Dora, in a generation where every mitzvah is so easy, it's never been easier. You know, in the time of Vilna, in the time of the Vilna Gaon, there was one Lulav and Etrog, there was for the whole town. Today you can buy 10 of the best, right? We've never had it so easy. The best tefillin, the best mezuzahs, everything the best, right? Even the constitutions allow you to work for 5 days, and you know your Shabbos you can get off. You know, it's never been easier spiritually, and boom, the whole world stopped, and even Hashem, in a certain sense, said no. Spiritually, certain things have to stop. Minyonim, right? And one of those things is the Pesach Seder. So I think just like, you know, if a person is a little bit humble and is honest, you know, he has to look back and think, well, you know, this obviously isn't the right. So the minute that you're doing the Zoom and all these things, Skype, so then you're almost, that's a little bit chutzpahdik, if I could say, you know, that's clearly not the rotzen. That's clearly not the will of Hashem this year. You know, I'm not a prophet at all. I'm very small in wisdom. The point is that I think it's rather obvious that it's a different year this year. You know, and Hashem's obviously trying to say to us, sit back and consider where you're at, what's life about, and there's this world, there's the next world. How much am I doing in terms of my growth towards Hashem and His mitzvah?
So then another question was raised during the week, not tonight, but it came up in a couple of the texts that we've been receiving or one of the WhatsApp groups. The question of some items are not available at this time. They usually would be. I don't know specifically what, but the message coming out of from the Rabbonim was saying that if you can't get what you normally would get, and it's not basically, I mean, let's take milk and items like that. They said you can work around it. So what do you look for? What should one look for? Obviously you're going to get matzah. You're going to try and make sure that you get everything. But what is the ruling if you can't get these things?
Well, just to understand the question, it's a touch vague. What's the other option? Meaning if you can't get them, then what's the other option?
The option is you would get something that you would normally buy. Say you would buy normal milk, or you would buy normal food of whatever nature, but it wouldn't be kosher right. Pesach.
So I think we have to distinguish between two things. There's a major prohibition in the Torah over Pesach called chametz. You're not allowed to eat chametz. Chametz is something made of the five grains, wheat, barley, spelt, oats, and rye, that has undergone some form of chametz. How do you say it in English? It's fermented. I don't know. It's risen. Okay.
Yes.
For lack of a better word. Okay. Now, that is a very, very severe prohibition in the Torah. That means if a person eats bread on Pesach, let me explain. When it comes to mitzvahs, which are positive mitzvahs, like giving tzedakah, putting on tefillin, talis, right? All these things, if you don't do them, right? So there is some form of punishment in that you've neglected a positive mitzvah. But you wouldn't get lashes in the time of the Beis Hamikdash and the Sanhedrin, so you wouldn't get lashes, right? There's no greater punishment beyond the fact that you actually missed a mitzvah, which in itself is rather severe. But there's no lashes or there's no stoning, you know. By Shabbos, you know, if a guy breaks Shabbos, so then that incurs a death penalty. You know, there's a lot of things, you know, bestiality incurs a death penalty. A killing person also, you know, so I'm saying, so when it comes to Averas, when it comes to negative prohibitions, things you're not allowed to do, so then there are consequences. But when it comes to positive things, so then there aren't these type of consequences. So what I'm saying is when it comes to chametz carries kares. Kares means that your shomer in a certain sense is diluted, it's been, distance quite a bit from its root. Your soul has been distanced from its root, and that's rather severe. Now, so kares is one of the worst forms of punishment a person can get, and chametz carries that punishment. So I'm saying to you that on the first category, to go and buy something which is chametz, right, is absolutely out. You know, even if you know if you have to eat matzah for 8 days and finish, right, and you've got nothing else to eat, you've done a mitzvah every second that you haven't eaten chametz. But to go and eat chametz carries major consequences. And there, and by virtue, you can actually see how important Pesach is, because if this is one of the few things that carries kares, right, so then it must be that Pesach and chometz are very, very crucial. So that's number one. The second category, and this is maybe where the rabbis are trying to find a leniency, is things which don't have any chametz in. Right, but just that they haven't been fully supervised to know right now that there's no chametz in them. Okay? And even if there was a touch of chametz, so then that would have been nullified before Pesach. Because nothing can be, so if it's, you know, one in 60, let's say, before Pesach, so the halacha is that you're not allowed to put, you can't put bread, you know, in your pot roast before Pesach and then eat it on Pesach. That's, you know, you're not allowed to do that. But if it did somehow get mixed in before Pesach, so then it would be permitted under certain conditions. But on Pesach is for sure out. So it could be that the rabbis are saying that something like milk, which is unlikely to have anything added into it, so then maybe there's a leniency. I personally would be very, very wary of such a leniency, unless somebody's actually looked into it, because unfortunately today you don't know what's actually going on in the factories. So in as much as, you know, you want to try to find a way out for people, but you can't, we live for Hashem, we don't live for ourselves. So if Hashem's saying to us, Hashem is the one that created us, he actually gave us ourselves. So if Hashem's saying, listen, you can't eat it, so then it's out. So just in terms of the first category, if it's chametz, you're for sure out. It carries kares, that's a major prohibition. But in terms of the second category, it may depend on how much the research has been done.
Okay, so those were basic questions that were given. One or two people did ask, what's the process? So normally on the nights of Pesach, one would go to shul, one would do mincha, maariv, etc., etc. What advice for that at home?
Okay, look, I think the point is that daven mincha early, if you can pray mincha early, that's very good. Then you're going to do ma'ariv. Ma'ariv is exactly the same. That's the evening service. It's exactly the same as you would have done in shul, except that you can't say baruch hu, because you can only say Baruch Hu with a minyan. Okay, and you can't say Kaddish, obviously, because you can only say it with a minyan. So, but aside from anything that requires 10 people, you do that. And it's, but that you should only do after nightfall. That means that once it's really, night, say when there are three stars, okay, or even whatever the, you could look at the calendar and see when is it,
That's pretty well broadcast. I mean, I give you the times, it's not difficult to find that
so,
out.
So, yeah, but just remember that you want to daven Maariv after the time that, let's say, three stars would come down, not the time that you light candles. Then because you don't have to walk home and you don't have to, chat and welcome guests and all of that, so you can get on with it, right? So what you do is, I'll give you just one or two tips. The one is that you should have your Pesach plate, your Seder plate ready before Pesach. In other words, on Erev Pesach, already sort it out. Have your roasted, bone, and your roasted egg over there, and have your maror on your plate, and have your matzah ready and your bottles of wine ready, because we have a principle that the quicker you can do a mitzvah, meaning the quicker you can start a mitzvah, so then the better. So you can so as soon as you finish davening, you can already start, and then you make kiddush as per the Haggadah, and you go through each stage of the Haggadah as you would have if you were at someone else's house. And really, if you've got a good Haggadah with a, and it's got an English translation, so then it usually tells you exactly what to do. You know, it's not for, you don't need to be a rocket scientist to know what to do. You can just read through it and it will tell you. I think it's important. Maybe one of the questions that people have asked also is, do we have to do everything in Hebrew? Okay, because most of the Haggadah is in Hebrew. There's even one part of it which is in Aramaic. So you don't have to do it in Hebrew. You could do it in English. Again, I would say that those three paragraphs that I mentioned before, which are the main mitzvah of saying over the story, is should be done with in Hebrew and English. But really, the whole Haggadah can actually be done in English. So you shouldn't and there's no need to rush because you've got nowhere to go, And just follow the normal process that you would have if you were at someone's house. But as I say, the key over here is preparation. I can't say it enough times. You're more than welcome to email me on dannybrodie@gmail.com, dannybrodie@gmail.com, and I'll send you a guide on what you need and how to run a Seder for the first time. And even insights on the Haggadah, some interesting, because it's really a knot of belief in Hashem and more so this year than perhaps any other year, in our generation. It's quite unbelievable. And the air here in Israel is an air of Mashiach. We're just waiting for the shofar to be blown, and hopefully everybody will be here for Pesach.
So now we're coming to the end of the show, and it's been fascinating stuff talking about, for some people, of course, it's old hat and they really know what they're going to do and how they're going to go about it. But from the point of view of, those of us who are not that, clued up and so on, this has been enlightening. Just what are the greetings that one gives everybody at this time? Just run through those things. What does one wish your friends, your relatives, your families? What kind of message does one give to the when wishing people a happy Pesach?
You're right. So look, there is another mitzvah on the night of Penahol of Yom Tov. Every Yom Tov is a mitzvah of Simcha. Hashem wants us to be happy. He gave us Yom Tov. Sefer HaChinuch says that Hashem wants us to be happy, and that's why He actually gave us Yom Tov. Right? So you got to be happy on Yom Tov. Right? Don't have a long face on Yom Tov. You got to be happy. That's why you also need to have nice meals over Yom Tov, to drink a bit of wine. Obviously, all kosher le Pesach. So one has to be happy, and therefore the traditional greeting is Chag Sameach, to have a happy Chag. Right? There are two ways of greeting great pleasure. One is you can just have a bra and it's a little bit mundane. Or you can have a Yom Tov meal, which is elevated, where you're speaking words of Torah, ideas, you're thinking about all the miracles that Hashem does for us on a constant basis and did for us. in Mitzrayim, and that would elevate it and become a much more spiritual and much more elevated meal. So the traditional greeting is Chag Sameach. I think that it's important for me to mention that Klal Yisrael is in Tzoras. I speak with a bit of a broken tone when I say this, but Klal Yisrael is in Tzoras, and we need to daven hard. So if you've got a family, start a WhatsApp group that does Tehillim, a little bit of Tehillim. We did one with my family and my wife's family, where you break it up, the whole book on one day. Not, you don't need to go crazy, you don't need to do every day, but we have to try and do a little bit more. But and more than that, I think each person has to sit down and just consider Hashem has stopped the world. He's obviously stopped my normal day-to-day life. He's obviously talking to me. What can I do? Where can I better myself? It could be in Loshon Hara. It could be in different types of mitzvahs, Shabbos. But that at this time is the important thing, to daven for Klal Yisrael and to try and take on things that you'll grow from this. It would be very sad if after 21 days, or however long this thing's going to last, that a person hasn't grown. Rather take on a project, start learning the laws of Lashon Hara, or start learning, there's a great book on Shabbos called Learn Shabbos in 3 minutes a day. Right. So take on something to grow from, because Hashem's is when bad things happen, so Hashem's talking, and so we have to commiserate it. We have to try and bring down the mercy to the world, and that is by davening and by doing more mitzvahs. But in particular, we have to take that there's a message. Hashem's talking to me, and there could be no better time than Pesach to go from this enslavement of our own natures, and to go from there to the freedom of Torah and mitzvahs.
And we have to leave it there, and we've reached the end of the show, and thank you, Rabbi Daniel Brody, for coming on and talking to us about Pesach, and thank you for I want to at this moment take the opportunity to wish everybody, all the listeners and everybody else who's not listening even, Chag Sameach, and next week we will not be having a show because it will be deep into our seders, and wish everybody well and be safe and stay indoors.